everybody. Welcome to the biweekly Q&A call for Inner Circle students. How is everyone doing?
Good.
Great.
Hello, hello, hello. How is everybody?
Doing great.
Hello, happy to
Good.
Awesome, awesome. That's great, that's great. Okay. I had a couple of questions come in. So I'm going to go ahead and knock these out, get them out of here. Let's see. Corey, hopefully Corey's on the line. Can you give me a current example of a Filthy Riches deal, i.e. a typical current list price, your typical first offer, then the approximate amount or percentage of the list price that you actually are paying for the property? Is Corey, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, good, good. Thank you for that. Well, when I first started out with Filthy Riches and the market was different than it is now, the way a typical Filthy Riches deal would work would be it was a house listed for $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, and I would end up paying $5,000 to $10,000 for it, okay? And but when the market turns, you've got to move with the market. As anyone would know that has downloaded the updated Filthy Riches manual. If you have Filthy Riches and you have not updated your manual, then look on your read this first sheet for the link. And then all you have to do is go to the webpage, log in, and download the new manual. And I've also re-recorded new audio for you as well, so you could check that out. But a typical Filthy Riches deal is anywhere from a $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, even $30,000 house now. We bought a house not too long ago where we paid $25,000. I bought houses recently. We paid $30,000. On the higher priced houses, I'm going to sell them for probably two and a half or two plus 10 grand. So if I pay 30 for it, two times that is 60 plus 10 grand. I'm going to sell it for 69.9 is a typical number. As far as giving you a percentage of list, I've actually bought houses that I paid over list for. It's extremely rare. I've only done one of those ever since I can remember. However, I did pay over list for a house, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago, something like that. But typically, usually, I'm going to be paying anywhere from 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% of list price, somewhere around there. And I know that's a wide range, but you have
Joseph and Helen Schrach.
Say that again. But what you have to do is you have to back into the number, because you remember you want your payment to be somewhere around where the rent comps are. So once you figure the rent comps, then figure a loan amount based on the rent comps, and then add the down payment to it. That's your sales price. So cut that by a third, and that's about how much you need to be paying for the property. So, Corey, did that help?
Yeah, that did, Larry. I appreciate that. So if you could repeat the last two phrases that you said about, because I kind of get that it should be, you need to really consider the rental amount.
Right.
What
we do is pull rent comps. For example,
yes,
let's say the rent comps are $600 to $800.
What?
I'm going to take $600,
uh-huh,
the low end, and then I'm going to figure a payment based on that. Okay? And that payment is probably going to be somewhere around $66,000, okay? Because I do 9%, and let's just say it's for 20 years, all right? I like to do shorter than 20 years if I can, but let's just say this is 20 years. So that's going to be around 66. And let's say that when I'm talking to realtors, and they're going to tell me, oh, you could probably get $5,000 down in this area, okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take $5,000 plus 66, that's 71. Now, I'm not going to sell a house for 71. I'm going to sell it, if it's that close to a round number like 70, I'm going to sell it for 69.9. So now I take 69.9 and minus 10 divided by 2, that leaves me around a $30,000 sale price, or purchase price, I should say, $30,000 purchase price. So, having said that, does that help? Did that explain it a little better?
Yeah, it did. I really appreciate it. I think you've got it now.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad. Now, let me take a look here and see if I can pull up a couple more that came in by email. Let's see here. I know we did have a few come in today. Here's another one. This one is from Francis Whalen.
And I'm here.
Good, good, good. On HUD properties, can you please explain the best process for bidding? I guess this still is confusing to me. If I use the half-off method, I am finding I don't even get a counter offer. I have found a couple good HUD properties, and I bid on one recently with no response. For a HUD property, can I just do a double close and wholesale it to another buyer and get the $10,000 profit I want? Let me go ahead and answer that question. Yes, you can wholesale a HUD house. You can do a double closing. You just cannot assign a contract on a HUD house, as you just mentioned right below what I just read, that you know you cannot assign a HUD contract. But there are lots of HUD homes out there. Yes, there are. Let's see. Everyone knows the HUD properties usually have the carpet and flooring removed. If there was a reason to have it removed, they are, yes. And they may have no appliances or bad ones. Yes, that's true with any property. To do it as a Filthy Rich's house with owner financing, should our company plan to replace these items or turn that over to the homeowner we finance? It seems that the possible buyers we hear about, if they have a few thousand dollars to put down, will likely not have money to buy appliances or put in flooring and get started living in the house. Okay, I'm going to answer that question first, and then we'll go back to getting HUD houses, okay? You all right with that?
I'm all right with that.
Okay, good. So let's talk about fixing up the HUD house. Depending on the market you're in, depending on where you are, okay? Like, for example, what market are you buying in, by the way, Francis?
Eastern North Carolina.
Okay, good. Eastern North Carolina. Stay out of my neighborhood.
I'm a little above the line.
Just kidding. Okay, so there's enough to go around for everyone. So, okay, let's say you're buying in an area like, say, Alabama, okay? Let's say Birmingham, where there's a ton of these little cheap deals, these little Filthy Riches type houses. If there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of them with no carpet and maybe no appliances, you know, you've got more competition. So common sense would tell me that I'm going to need to make my house a little bit nicer. I'm going to need to stand out a little bit from the crowd because there's so many of these houses for sale. So what I would probably do is I would probably figure in, you know, what is my max I need to be in this property, including if I have to put in appliances and or paint and or carpet, okay? And it just naturally, it stands to reason that if you put in carpet and appliances, it's probably going to sell quicker and you're going to get less negative feedback in your showings. However, that means you're going to have to rehab it or get somebody to rehab it or get somebody to put the carpet in or something. And I'm not a big fan of rehabs. I hate rehabs. I don't enjoy it at all. Don't want to deal with it. Don't want to deal with contractors. I hate it. But occasionally I might have to do a little something just to make sure that the property sells. Now, here's a good quick rule of thumb that I do, okay? If I'm looking at a property and maybe it needs carpet, maybe it needs appliances, let's say that's $3,000 worth of work, okay? That sounds a little low, but I'm just using that as an example. Let's say it's $3,000. I'm going to figure that in my offer, okay? And if I get an offer accepted, knowing that I can put the $3,000, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and market the property as is. Now, I haven't closed on it yet. I'm marketing it as is. I'm trying to sell it. I got my 20 or 25 signs out. I got it on Craigslist, and I'm promoting it. I'm sending it out to my buyers list, all that stuff. And if I'm getting a lot of feedback like, oh, it needs carpet, it needs carpet, it needs carpet, it needs carpet, no appliances, it needs carpet. So by the time it comes to close, once I close on it, I'm going to go ahead and put the carpet in it. But if that's not the negative feedback I'm getting, if it's not a consistent pattern, then I'm going to go ahead and try to sell it as is without doing the work. I don't like to have to do the work unless I absolutely have to. Okay?
That makes sense.
Good, good, good. Okay. Did that answer that part? So now we can move on to the HUD office.
Yes.
Okay, good. Let me back up here a little bit and reread this for everybody. On HUD properties, can you explain the best process for bidding? I guess this is still confusing. If I use the half-off method, I am finding I don't even get a counteroffer. I have a couple of good HUD properties. Okay, Francis, let me ask you a question. How many HUD offers have you made?
Four.
Four, okay. I probably
five
make...
if you consider I rebid.
I'm sorry?
Five if you consider I rebid on one of them.
Okay, okay. Four is nowhere near enough to tell if you, you know, to find a pattern.
Okay.
I will tell you, about a week or two, something like that ago, maybe 3 weeks, I can't remember, I got a HUD house, a bid accepted. We actually got a bid accepted today as well. But I got a HUD house accepted a couple of weeks ago or so. It was listed for $76,000. They accepted a bid of $26,600.
Wow.
$26,600, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
And the house, check this out, okay? The house had only been listed for 19 days.
Oh, my gosh.
That's 35% of list price. Now, how in the world could I get a bid accepted of 35%? It's because I didn't offer on four houses. I offered on 400 houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? Not really 400, probably
I about know what
200. But you know what I'm saying.
I do.
Okay. So, I mean, I could turn around and sell it at 50% a list and still make good money. Still
right.
Make good money. That's 15, 7 threes or 21. That's 21... 6 threes or 18, 21, 22, 8. I'd make $22,800 on that, right?
Yep.
If I turn around and sold it at 50% of list.
Yeah. Okay.
So the key is with HUD, make offers, make offers, make offers, okay?
The volume, yeah.
You got to make it up in volume. You absolutely do. Now, here's the other thing. You can, if you don't have time, you don't have a VA, you don't have somebody that'll submit a bunch of bids for you,
which
it's okay. What you can do is go in and analyze each individual property. So instead of just offering 25 or 35% or 40% or whatever on these properties, what you can do is analyze each one and find the ones that are already kind of underpriced, so you can pick them up for 50, 60, 70% of list price, and you have a much better chance of your bid being accepted, but you already know it's a good deal. So you're going to spend about 10 minutes analyzing the deal to make sure it's a good deal, okay?
Yeah.
To make sure it's a good deal, and then put your bid in. That way you're not having to put in 200 bids at 20, 30, 40%. You're working the ones that you know you got a pretty good shot at. Okay? That's what I'm telling you that you could do is a rifle approach. What I just described that I did on this one was a shotgun approach. So does that help?
It does help. I know I have to do more if I'm going to get any of the HUD homes. So, yeah, that does help.
Good. Remember, HUD is just one source. Just
right.
One source. That's it. Okay.
But I seem to be running into more HUD homes than anything else. I have one agent that's sending me everything he gets every day. I get a listing, a bunch of listings, and so many of them are HUD homes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And as long as they're willing to put in the bids for you, there's nothing in the world wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Good, good. So did that answer all your questions?
Well, that answered that one. I have another one I was going to ask.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Well, it's about when we were in class with you at Inner Circle, you gave us an example using your analyzer, using the 100% of the offer. It just one of the examples you said, let me put this in, and you put down the asking price, and you put in 100%. And I don't know why and when we would use that to figure out our, to analyze a property.
Okay, good. I'm glad you brought that up. The me putting in 100% was not to tell you how much to offer on a property.
Right.
It was because the analyzer, like for example, you can put down in the analyzer that you want to offer 20% of something, okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, you could put that you want to offer 25% of list price or 30% of list price or whatever. Then the way the analyzer works, you would enter that list price and it figures that percentage, say it's 25%, and then it bases all your numbers, what you're going to sell it for, the payment, how much you're going to make, how much you can sell your note for, and everything based on that number that you pay for the property, which is a percentage of the list price.
Right.
If you want to fake out the analyzer and just simply enter in a number so you can kind of run it and see what it is, you just put in 100% there and then just put in the number that you want to pay for the property, and it analyzes the whole thing for you.
Okay. I thought I had missed something in class. That
No, not at all. It's just a way to fake out the calculator or the analyzer so you can just go ahead and get right to the exact number that you want to run the numbers on.
Okay. That makes perfectly good sense now.
Good, good, good.
Thank you.
Did that get all your questions answered?
It did. Thank you.
Excellent. You're very welcome. Thank you. Okay, while I'm looking for this next email, who else has a question?
Larry, this is Joan. I have a question. I'm going to piggyback on some of this HUD information.
Sure.
So I have made several offers for some HUD properties in the Alabama area, and listing prices around 25 to 30, let's say, list price, HUD list price for the home. I was coming in pretty low at the like Filthy Rich's initial pricing of 20, low 20s as the initial offer. I actually would get quite a bit of counter offers, but they would only come down maybe a couple thousand off the list price, so from say 30,000 to 28.
Right.
From what I'm hearing, the original 18 to 22% lowballing in Filthy Riches is not necessarily applicable anymore. Overall, is that correct?
Well, here's what I would like you to do, and I have bought houses at 20%. You know, that haven't been too long ago. But here's what I would like for you to do. Look on your Read This First sheet, go and download the latest updated manual that I did, and I completed it just about a month ago. And I also re-recorded the complete audio for Filthy Riches. And in that audio and in that updated manual, I go through all the updates about the way the market has turned and the way it's changed, and you've got to, you know, follow the market and to be able to do more deals. And I've also expanded on the type of deals that I do, not just a $5,000 or $10,000 house, but a $20,000, $30,000, $35,000 house, even a $1,500 mobile home in a park. So I would suggest that you go download the latest manual and check that out, and it will enlighten you on some ways that you can do more deals and have more options to do these kind of deals in today's current market.
Yeah, I have downloaded the manual, and I guess the question I have is, if I'm looking at either a HUD or an REO or whatever that appears to be already at a reduced rate, a reduced list price, is there a website that you feel has really good, like, sold comps, so you can see if it's listed at, say, 30,000, I'm just going to throw this out there, easy to figure, 30,000, but it seems like the comps in the area are also in the 30,000 range, so if you don't get it at a substantial discount, then that plan of, you know, buy low, sell high, you get six times your sales price at a Filthy Riches versus, as you were talking about earlier, 2.5 times for a higher priced property.
Well, I'm pretty sure since you've downloaded the new manual, I'm sure you see then that it's not necessarily based on 18% to 22% any longer based on today's market. And also you will see that it doesn't have to be six times. You don't have to sell it for six times what you paid for it. It's 3 to 6 times typically. On the higher priced houses, it's harder to sell for 3 to 6 times. For example, if you pay $30,000 for a house, it's going to be very, very, very difficult to sell that house for $180,000, which is 6 times. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, the higher the priced house, the lower your yield is going to be because you don't get as much of a spread. However, they should be nicer houses in nicer areas in better condition. So you should be able to sell those notes at a higher price, meaning a lower yield. In other words, I talk about in Filthy Riches selling these notes at 20, 25, 30%. Well, the higher price deals, I've sold these notes at 12 to 15% yield, and I also talk about that in the updated manual, as you probably have seen.
Now, can you, on the Filthy Riches members website, is that where the re-recorded audio is as well? Because I downloaded the manual, but I don't have the updated CDs, so to speak.
Right. It should be on the exact same page.
Okay.
Yep. They should all be right there.
Something I'm having trouble wrapping my head around is finding good comps. So that if a house is listed, say, at 30 because it's already at a below market rate, how do I find what the actual market rate is so that I can do my evaluations? Unfortunately, right now, it's kind of like I'm the chief cook and bottle washer all wrapped into one. So,
Right. So Zillow does have sold comps. Once you look at your property, you can scroll down and click on the link that says neighborhood, and then look at the map, and then zoom out, and it'll show you all the different comps around there for sale and sold.
Okay. I wasn't sure how, I guess if it's sold, that's a definite. I know Zillow has
you don't want to look at for sale. Forget about for sale. You only care about sold.
Right.
That's all you care about. Now, if you want to pay a little extra money, you can use something like RealQuest or CoreLogic to pull comps, but Zillow will give you sold comps.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Does that help?
Yes, it does.
Good, good, good. Okay, who's next? Who has a question?
Hey, good evening, Larry. It's Dave McGee in Richmond. How you doing?
What's happening, buddy? How you been?
I'm doing real good. Thank you very much. We're doing the owner financing, as you have taught us. And we have sold, well, we have under contract right now. I couldn't say they're done deals because people back, we found out that people back out very often in this. So we have one house that was actually for sale. We bought it on HUD. The after repairs value on it is like 60. Forrest was able to nab it for like 15.5, which was a really good deal.
Right.
And somehow or another, he actually had this thing pre-sold. And the lady actually backed out, but I'm rambling on. That's not my question. We actually have sold another one to husband and wife, well, they're fiancés. And they're elderly, and their credit score is not really great. It's like 540 for
right.
both of them. So as we were giving them the contract to sign, the lady alone wanted to sign for that. And my question was, I remember back one time when I was in doing real estate for rental that I only had one person sign, and one of the people actually skipped out, and so only had one person left to go after in case they don't pay. So my question to you is, should we always get both of them to sign even though they're not married yet? Or how do you feel about that? Is one sufficient enough? This is an owner finance deal. They're going to use their tax money when they get it. They did give us a small deposit to secure the contract and signed it.
How much deposit did they give you?
It's only $500.
How much?
$500.
Okay. I always try to get a minimum of $1,000. That'll help you to keep them from walking.
And I agree. We're having a hard time finding people with $3,000 and $5,000 right now. That's
put
our
down.
Very big, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Are you talking to realtors in advance
prior
to buying them and asking realtors, hey,
Mark,
if I sell this house with owner financing, how much do you think I can get down based on the house in the area?
I don't know if Forrest is doing that or not. I don't think he is.
That's
I don't think he's on
the
call right
to
now.
Do. Remember, we talked about that at my office. You need to make sure you call a local agent, especially if you're buying, you know, out away from where you live. Talk to a couple of agents, you know, two or three, and ask them, if you sold this house with owner financing, what do they think you could get for a down payment? That way you got
mm-hmm.
a good idea, and you're not just hoping or guessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, my initial question really would be, how do you feel about just getting one person to sign, or should we from now on try to get both?
I would always get both on it.
Uh-huh.
Always. I mean, because if they have a problem, and they're going to have a problem eventually, the one that
yeah.
hasn't signed is going to walk, especially,
uh-huh.
especially if the one who hasn't signed, you're using part of their income to help qualify or at least to help you feel more comfortable. But I would always get everybody involved to sign. That way you got
uh-huh.
them all on the hook. And if they want to leave, you know, if they have a problem, if they're splitting up or whatever, that's between them. But that way you can let them know, well, you're both still obligated. So I don't care who pays me, but I need to get paid.
Right. Well, is it too late now? We've just signed an agreement for her to purchase right now. We haven't done a mortgage yet with him. So
now,
when we maybe get to
say,
that point, we
did you say it was listed for 60 and you picked that one up for 15?
Different house. I'm sorry, I've scattered myself all around.
That's okay.
That was a deal we just recently picked up, and the lady was going to put $5,000 down. She was going to meet us this weekend, and she was going to put $500 down to seal the deal, and she was going to close the end of this month. She never showed up.
Yeah. Well, that happens when you're dealing with people that need owner financing. They need owner financing for a reason, because they don't have good enough credit to go to a bank, which basically means they aren't going to be as reliable. Typically, don't get me wrong, bad things happen to good people, okay?
Yeah.
People can go through divorce, you know, have a death in the family, have an illness, medical bills, you know, lose a job, whatever. But typically, people have bad credit for a reason. And it's because they don't pay their bills. So they're not going to generally be as reliable of a person as somebody who would be, say, paying cash. Now, on that particular house, maybe you and Forrest could talk about it. But if you're in it for 15 and it was listed for 60, personally, I would just put it back on the market for $30,000 cash, or put out a bunch of foreclosure signs all around that say 29.9 cash, and I would find a cash buyer, because if I'm not mistaken, your model is going to be seller finance it and then sell the note. So you could probably sell it quicker and bypass that second step by selling, having to sell the note and just wholesale it and generate a quick $15,000 cash.
We're probably going to yield the same amount of money anyway, right?
You probably would. You probably would, depending on how much you could sell that note for. But probably so.
I think we're looking at maybe a 15% discount on notes.
Yeah. So you could, even if you made a few dollars less, you see, you might even have to hold that note for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, we're going to have to hold them for at least 3 months on some.
Right.
We have four houses. We sold to two people that backed out, so we're back down. We have two houses to liquidate.
Well, I hope you kept their deposit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, the one that didn't show up has not made a deposit. And
right,
the one who was supposed to buy another house, they hadn't got to the process of putting the deposit down. So,
good. How's your private lender from California working out?
He is still good. I met him at the Love Shack.
Right.
Well, Walter Wolford's Love Shack.
Yeah, yeah.
Back at the end of fall. And he said, you know, what he said was, get these houses sold, and he would be the rest of our lives our financier. He said, just show me that you know what you're doing.
Right.
And that you can liquidate, you know, you can get rid of these properties at a profit.
Right.
So we did buy in between, I guess all together we've had about five houses. We sold one fix and flip for about $22,000 profit. He wasn't involved with that. And we just recently picked up this other house without his financing. So we're actually going on a cruise. I guess you're going on that too, right?
You're talking about the Financial Friends?
Yeah, in January.
Yeah, I would like to be able to, but I can't make it. I've got an event coming up, so I can't make that one. But I will be on the one in the fall, and I'm going on the National Rhea Cruise in February.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well,
but I wanted to.
Walter
asked me to speak on it, and I was originally scheduled to, but I had to bow out.
Well, anyway, we'll see him on the cruise, and I'm sure he'll be happy with our progress. We've already told him what we sold two of his houses.
That's great. Well, good, good. So that's what I would do. I'll make sure you get everybody's signature on there. get a higher deposit or down payment amount, down payment, but higher deposit, as much as they have, and then I would wholesale that one house if you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. That help?
Yes, sir.
Good. Tell Forrest I said hi.
Certainly will.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I've got a quick one.
Sure.
This is Claire Cheney.
Hey, Claire, what's up?
Well, lots and lots. But I'm wondering, when's a good time to, when do you get the deposit? With the application, just when do you get the deposit at closing?
Well, what we typically do, you mean the deposit or the down payment?
Well, what's the difference?
Well, the deposit is what they put up when they sign a contract. Like, maybe they're putting $5,000 down, but they're going to give you a $1,000 deposit with the signing of the contract, and then their balance is going to be $4,000 plus whatever closing costs you're having them pay.
Okay, gotcha. So I do. I've seen that in the contract.
What you want to get them on paper as soon as you can.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to get them on paper as soon as you can. And
do you just take that deposit? I know you're a little more structured at this point, but for a beginner, do I just take that deposit myself? Do I have them get to the title company who's working the house? What do I do?
I try to get them to give it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and that deposit is non-refundable or non-refundable at the point?
Well, I tell them, if there's any reason you don't qualify, I'm not going to keep your money.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah, but if they just want
to back
out. You don't
keep it just to keep it, but if they just want to back out. I had that disappear. Yeah,
and listen, every situation is different. I mean, I've had people that back out at the last minute and I give them their money back. And maybe it was one of them lost a job or maybe a kid had an accident or something or whatever it was. But it really was kind of beyond their control. But if they just changed their mind or decided it wasn't for them, I don't want to give them their deposit back.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. That help?
Okay. Oh, it does. It does.
Excellent. Excellent. Glad I could help. Okay. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah.
Hey, Larry. This is Patty in Asheville. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So we just closed on our house with our buyers, and it was we did it on a land contract, and we had the buyer get his own insurance. Now, he talked to a guy at Foremost Insurance, and the type of insurance that he got, if anything happened to the home, they would pay us as the mortgagees, they would pay us off, and then he would get to put a new home on the lot. So he's paying a lot more for insurance than the price of the home.
Right, replacement value.
Right, right.
Right.
So he's having that taken out of his paycheck directly. So we're not escrowing that, but we are escrowing the taxes, and of course, the home is still in our LLC's name.
Right.
And then if there's money left over at the end of the year, that's going to go towards the principal on the house.
Okay.
That was our agreement.
Money left over what?
So my question is...
Wait a minute. Money, if there's money left over from what?
After the taxes are paid.
Oh, okay. Well,
but if there's money left over in the escrow account after taxes are paid...
Okay.
Then that is going to go toward the principal of the house.
Well, I would leave that in there personally, but if you've already got it in writing and you've agreed to give him any balance back, I understand. But, just know taxes can go up. And
right,
you don't want to leave him hanging with owing, an extra $300 or $500 at the end, at the beginning of the year.
Right, right. Well, I hear what you're saying. Our lawyer also told him that he, because he is going to be owning the house, that he could get a homeowner's exemption, which would bring the taxes back down to 4% instead of 6% for most investors.
Okay.
So, I think we've got that pretty well covered.
Good.
You know, and of course, in it also says in there that the price could fluctuate because of an increase in taxes.
Right.
So, so that's pretty covered. But my question is I was thinking of servicing this myself. In that, you know, he would just pay the $750 to the LLC, and then of course I would put, you know, the portion in the escrow account.
Right.
And once the taxes will come to us because it's in our name, in the LLC's name, and once the taxes were paid, you know, we'd still have that escrow account. But really, all I would have to do is go by an amortization schedule and send him a 1098 form in January. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Would that be wise to do?
Is he an owner-occupant?
Yes.
Okay. And are you are escrowing for taxes but not for insurance, correct?
Right. That's correct.
Okay. How are you planning on managing that? Do you have a software or NoteSmith or QuickBooks or what?
Yes, QuickBooks.
QuickBooks? Okay.
Yes.
Are you pretty comfortable with the accounting?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't done this before.
Okay. All right. Personally, I would say just hire a servicer.
Okay.
Let me ask you this question too. What are your plans? Are you going to keep the note long term, or are you going to sell it?
I'm not sure.
If
not sure yet.
If you think there's a possibility you're going to sell it, then go ahead and hire a servicer.
Okay.
Especially if there's a possibility you're going to sell it. So that way, you have a pay history from the servicer.
Okay.
I use AFTS a lot.
AFTS?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay.
AFTS, I think it's AFTSonline or something.com. I can't remember. But it's something funds transfer service. They go by AFTS. And
okay.
The only thing I do not like about them, and it can be a pain, is you have a different login for each one of your loans.
Okay.
But what I do is I just keep a bookmark of tabs. And, you know, I'll group them together, and I'll have a group of tabs that I keep open or can open, and then just hit refresh and log back into each one of them.
Okay.
So that kind of helps with that. And it is a pain having a different login for each one.
But
yeah. That's the way they do it.
Right.
So, but I like AFTS. I definitely would use a servicer unless you feel really comfortable about the numbers, about daily interest, about paying the taxes, and about the escrow, and about servicing laws in the state where the property is.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Good.
Great.
Now,
that's what I needed to hear.
If you'd sold it to an investor, I would say, sure, service it yourself. But when you're dealing, that's the reason I ask you if it was an owner-occupied buyer.
Right, right. See, I have done a note with an investor, so I'm comfortable with that, but this is different. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, good.
Got it.
Well, good luck with it. Let me know if you need anything.
Okay, great.
Great. All right, cool. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah. This is Zico.
Hey.
The last time I asked you about buying property for owner financing using other people's money, and I just looked around at it and the way you answered it, but what I found out, it's like it's not possible for you to sell it on owner financing because the mortgage is in somebody else's name.
Okay, so what you're saying is if you buy a property and you use private money, say, and then you turn around and sell it with owner financing, you're not able to sell it because you have a loan on it.
Yeah.
Well, why can't you sell it if it's on a land contract?
Because I was just inquiring from this guy, and I was trying to put together, like, what a land contract is and all that kind of stuff. Maybe you can explain more to me, like, how that would work if you're setting it on a land contract.
What state are you trying
to in? PA.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Okay. You can buy and go get a mortgage. You can buy, go get a mortgage, and to sell on a land contract and keep that mortgage in place. Okay? In fact, our land contracts have clauses in there that say that we can mortgage the property. Somebody's got a lot of background noise. I can't tell what it is, but somebody's got a lot of background noise.
Okay, come again?
Okay, so you can buy a property, get a mortgage, and then turn around and sell it on a land contract and keep that mortgage in place. Now, in fact, our land contract agreements say that we reserve the right to finance and or refinance the property as long as their balance does not exceed their balance. Make sense?
As long as your balance does not exceed their balance.
Let's say you bought it for $50,000, you borrowed $50,000, and you sold it to them for $100,000. Okay?
Yeah.
You could put in your land contract that says as long as the balance does not exceed their balance. You could go and borrow another $50,000 as long as your amortization was the same or faster than theirs. So your balance, so you never owe more than they owe you. Does that make sense? An attorney can help you draw that up, or whoever's doing your land contract agreement, okay? Now, here's the second way you could do that. If you bought on a mortgage, you bought it for $50,000, you got a mortgage for $50,000, and you want to sell it for $100,000, you could still sell it on a mortgage, take back a mortgage. It would just be a wraparound mortgage. You're going to wrap it around your existing mortgage, and you're going to have $50,000 in equity. Any attorney can help you draw that up. Okay?
Okay.
It's called a wraparound mortgage. Or some people call it an all-inclusive trust deed. The $100,000 loan is all-inclusive of the $50,000 loan that you owe. Got it?
Okay, yeah.
Good, good, good.
You just have to disclose it, don't you, Larry? You just have to tell the buyer that there's an underlying lien, and most of the time they don't have an issue with it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Most of the time, quite frankly, they don't even know what it means. But you do need to have that in your documentation, that you have the right to mortgage it, the property is mortgaged or will be mortgaged, or you have the right to mortgage it.
Okay.
Good point, good point. Awesome. Who else? Who's got a question? You guys have had a lot of good questions tonight. Good stuff. Everybody's got a lot of good stuff going on. You're working it. Anybody else have a question?
Hi, Larry. This is Sheila. I have a question.
Hey, Sheila. How you been?
Oh, pretty good. I think I'm about to inherit from a passive note that I had purchased. It's been in existence for about 2 years. And I haven't gone through a procedure which involves possibly foreclosure on it. So I just had an email this past Monday, and I thought, oh, this email is going to the wrong person. But when I actually called, it is one of the homes on the note. So they just wanted me to be aware that I needed to possibly, you know, start action to prevent from losing my interest
right.
in the property.
Are you a first mortgage holder?
Well, I didn't know, but I guess I am. I'm the only one that's been notified.
Okay, yeah.
But
you probably want to. Was it from a foreclosure attorney or what?
It was originally from the company that I purchased the note from, and then they're the ones that had me contact the attorneys and their foreclosure attorneys.
Oh, okay. It sounds like you might need to get in touch with a foreclosure attorney to show them the letter you got and
yes.
have them represent you to make sure that was your interest.
Yes, and, you know, I guess the odd thing is that I'm still getting my regular payments. I had the latest last month, but it's just where the person hasn't been paying the taxes. And so I was told I just sent off a payment for a partial payment on the taxes. They said because if I acquire it, I'd have to pay the taxes off anyway. So I just wanted to pay the minimum amount until I find out or if I can find out what this person or is going to do or plans to do because this note was supposed to come due in June anyway.
Last year?
Of this coming year.
17.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, you could always pay the taxes and then add it to their balance or do a loan modification.
Okay. And that's what
sure
I
protect yourself.
Yes. So this will be my first experience on this end trying to handle this, but anyway, and then the note servicing company, they said they've been in contact with the owners, but there's been no responses from them.
Oh, okay. Have you
yes.
tried to reach out to them?
You know, I don't have that information, and I don't know if I'm privileged to have it, but I'll call and find out. But
yeah,
they on their end, they've been trying to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you definitely want to try to protect your interest in that. I mean, and make sure that you do want to protect your interest too. So you want to get some more details because it might be you're paying more money than what it's worth, and I don't know what the note balance is or if it's a first or second or what the taxes are, but you want to check and make sure that you actually do want to protect your interest because some lenders would rather just walk away depending on the circumstances. Yeah, so just check out and make sure that you do want to protect your interest, and if so, then make sure you do protect it.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. So does anybody else have a question? Well, you guys have had some good stuff. Got a lot of good stuff going on. Anybody else? We've been on here a while. Well, guys, I really appreciate you guys being on tonight. Thank you so much for your business. Thank you for your confidence in us. We don't take it lightly. And just know that if there's anything at all that you need in between these calls, just shoot me an email to Larry@LarryGoins.com and be sure and put Inner Circle in the subject line. Even if I need to call you, I'll call you right back. So,
thanks so much,
guys, thank you so much for being on. I hope everybody has a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.